This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
I will say good morning to our radio audiences, say that this is Raymond Charles Barker, and we're broadcasting from Alice Tully Hall, Lincoln Center in New York City, over 7 radio stations, and that is good, as well as our wonderful group of people here this morning in the hall. Now, with all that we read and all that we hear, can we, and we can, lift up our minds a bit and expect something good to happen? I was thinking earlier this morning, how long has it been since most people have forgotten to expect something good to happen? We have been so deluged with the opposite. So I'm inviting you to join with me in expecting something great, wonderful, to happen to each one of us individually. No reason why it can't, if we can open up our minds and let it happen. Because that which happens to us happens through us. That's an old truism. And it cannot happen to us unless it happens first on the inside of us. And so as we, in our knowledge of right thinking, build up an impression in our own minds of expecting something good to happen, then we have the nucleus of it in our consciousness, and it can come forth and be in our world. So, let's take a minute to be still and take this into the subconscious mind so that it can be at work for us as we are together here and long after we have departed from here. All right, we are still, we are quiet, recognizing one cause, one mind, one intelligence, one action of good, one infinite creative mind, spirit, cause. Being in all and through all, it is where we are at this instant. It is in us, even as we think it. Mind in me is pure cause, unlimited opportunity, good. So in my individual world, I now expect something good. Something greater than that which has gone before. Something wonderful. Something beautiful. Something that is fun. Something that is joy. All right, subconscious mind, you have it and you do it. Shall we turn to the third page of our program, and you'll find there the words of the song that we sing. And by the way, we get many letters from radio listeners saying, would you send me a copy of it because I want to sing along with you. So, as in a moment we stand to sing this, just know that there are people standing or sitting, I don't know, probably rattling coffee cups, and they will be singing this along with us, so we will be a mighty throng. We build a new tomorrow, we draw the pattern clear. We make our plans with wisdom, for mind is ever here. Our thinking makes our future, our actions pave the way. We build a new tomorrow on patterns formed today. Great old tune. And you people know it, so let us stand and sing it with enthusiasm.
Amen.
I'm going to talk now on the idea of right thinking, which is old hat to most of us, and yet it's the key to the whole thing. I have often said, and I have been intrigued no end, that 98% of what we say here has been said since the beginning of time. It has been said by the wise, the mystical, the great minds of philosophy particularly, that you and I are primarily thinking people. Or to use a larger term, you and I are primarily consciousness people. We are consciousness. And this consciousness has been idealized, and many of them, from Plato on down, told us all about the possibility of great ideas. Great ideas. And yet the philosophers themselves, even though they knew it, they didn't know what to do with it. I remember when I was studying Emerson, I was utterly intrigued, because here was a man who, long before our type of thought came into existence, not long, 20 years, was saying in his way what we are saying in our way. His language, different from our language. And yet when you read the life of Emerson, you realize while he knew it, he didn't know what to do with it. He was sick a great deal of the time, and interestingly enough, he was poor a great deal of the time. And every time he got his hands on some extra money, he went to Europe. That was his hobby, his love, because he knew Carlyle and the great minds over there. When his house burnt down, the city had to take a public subscription in order to build it up again. He didn't even have enough money to pay for even a part of the building of his house. Yet he could talk what we're talking. I won't say, yes, he gave lectures. Right what we're talking, but the practical aspect never came to him. Now, when did this all start? It started back in 1860, maybe 55, when a very kindly, very simple man began to see that you and I could change our actual life. I'm talking about the everyday function by a change and a correction of thought and feeling. This man, Phineas Parker Quimby, up in Maine, had been practicing what in those days was called mesmerism, which in these days is called hypnosis. And he saw people changed by the use of hypnosis. So he began to think, and he said, but why do I have to put them in a trance state? Why can't I induce the same thing just by talking to them? Now, he predated Freud, and he began doing exactly that. He stopped putting anybody in a trance, and he began to talk to them, and he said, whatever is wrong with you, this is not an exact quotation, whatever is wrong with you is a belief in your mind. And if you want to change it for what you want, then you change a belief in your mind. Then he proceeded to teach people how to do it. He developed what he called spiritual treatment. He used that word instead of prayer because the word prayer still has the connotation of reaching out beyond yourself to something. And he knew that that wasn't it at all. He knew that it was reaching within yourself for a perfect center and thereby changing the circumference of your experience. So he said that life was made up of truth, or that which is really so, as it would be in the spiritual idea, and belief, which is your conviction about it. That was the way he stated it. Now, one of his students later said the classic statement that all is infinite mind in its infinite manifestation. That was the next step. Not only should we change our consciousness, our mind, but to realize that everything around us in this universe is mental in causation, though factual in experience. Now the other teachers came along. We're down to around 1880 now, and we had a very great person, a woman called Emma Curtis Hopkins, and she taught many, many students. And her great key was, she said the three most important words in the Bible are simple. They are from Isaiah, "Look unto me," meaning change the direction of consciousness. Look unto me. In other words, change the direction of consciousness from the realm of fact to the realm of knowing. And so down the line we came. By the way, Mr. Holmes, who founded this teaching of religious science, studied with her late in the 20s, just prior to her passing. However, he got his ideas long before that, and had the whole thing going long before that. He just wanted to brush up with a great teacher who he knew wouldn't be here very long. Now, so here is this instruction of right thinking. You're going to say, well, why hasn't it been taught all down through the year? I don't know any more than you do. I think mainly because it became so involved in theology. And I think the human mind became so involved in theology that the simplicity of what we're trying to say was not uncovered. It was there. I am sure that the great minds that we have known, such as a Jesus, such as a Peter, a John, earlier in Isaiah, I am sure that all of these people did it without knowing what they were doing. Meaning, in the sense, they practiced it, but did not work out a theory on it. Because, take the teaching of Jesus. He talked about an interior cause, not an external one. He talked constantly about an interior cause in the mind and the heart of the individual. And said that was where the power was. That's where the creative life was. That's where the power to change conditions was. And that we believe here very, very definitely. Now, your mind, your emotions are the key to your life. And I've told you that every Sunday for the last 25, 30 years. And it's a matter of not only believing it, but doing something with it. That's all. Your mind and your emotions are the key to your experience. And you use them. You can't stop using them. You're using them all the time. There's no way out. You cannot escape it. So here we have now the principle and the practice of right thinking. In other words, why don't you have what you want? And demonstrate it through the power of your own consciousness. It's that simple. Why don't we have what we want and demonstrate it through the power of our consciousness? Because we can. There are people in this audience today, with the lights down as they are, I can't see them distinctly. There are people in this audience today who, if they were given a chance, could say, yes, I have proven it beyond the shadow of a doubt. And across this nation, in all the metaphysical groups there are millions of people who can say, yes, I have proven this beyond the shadow of a doubt. That, when I take the positive and hang with it, The negative has to lessen. Look, let's say you love great opera. So on Wednesday, you have tickets for Metropolitan at night. Things go wrong at the office. Things start out wrong at home. You've been worried all day. And then you go into that great theater, and for 3 hours, you don't worry. You don't worry at all. You're not annoyed with your boss or a member of your family. You don't even remember the dirty dishes that are still in the sink to be washed. You are completely taken over by beauty, and at the end of it, then you go home and all of a sudden you start right all over again. You remember the office and the ball. And you look at the dishes and say, oh Lord. And if there's a family argument going on, you go right back to where it was and everybody argues all over again. But for 3 hours, you didn't have that. Now, true, you use an external situation to change an interior condition. That's why it wasn't permanent. That's why it wasn't permanent. Some years ago, I said on a Sunday morning, I said, I wish next Sunday when you people come in, that you'd all go to the check room outside in the lobby. By the way, there isn't any at Tully Hall. But we used to when we were down in town hall. I wish you'd go to the check room, check your trouble. Then come in here and listen. And then when you go out, stop a minute and say, am I going to take those out of the check room and take them home with me? Or can I leave them there? You know. Quite often in consultation work with people who tell me their troubles, I'll say to them, all right, now, you've told me all this, I've heard all this, and they're going to throw it in my wastebasket. I have a great big wooden wastebasket, which they can see. And I say, all right, now, we're throwing that into the wastebasket. And it's going to go down in the incinerator. Then I talk to them about the spiritual side of the situation. That constant emphasis, you can change it. If you will think rightly. And then as they get up to go, I say, all right, now remember, it's here in this wastebasket. And don't you take it home with you. Now, how many do or don't, I have no way of knowing. But I know that wastebasket has certainly had a lot of mental and emotional garbage put into it. Because, that's right, people's trouble. Once in a while I sit there all alone, throw my own in. I say, all right, now, it's in the wastebasket, it's going to be taken down the incinerator, and I want it no more. And then I change my thought over to another picture. You see, it is not impossible to think idealistically. It is not impossible. It takes some work. So we have in the Old Testament the statement, let the weak declare they are strong. And that's the essence. Let the weak declare they are strong. Now, the people who are weak say, well, that's silly, because I'm weak, I'm not strong. And they go through this intellectual argument, and therefore they stay weak. Stay as they are. But you see, you and I have found out one thing. That the individual consciousness, your mind, my mind, when it is spiritually activated, it has in it all power. Now notice I said when it is spiritually active. Now I'd better define what I mean by the word spirit, because so many people are turned off by that term. You know, they kind of go, they throw it away in their hand. I define the word spirit as intelligence in action in a motivation of good. I'll give you that one again. To me, the word spirit means intelligence in action, in a motivation of good. Now, so I'm not dealing with a theological discussion of it at all. Let the others have any definition they want. I don't care. Now, I am intelligent, and so are you. Every person is intelligent. But not every person has the right motivation. Oh, yes, they have their wants. They can define their wants. They want this, they want that, they want the other. But then, let them ask themselves, but do I have a real motivation toward these? Or is it wishful thinking, hope, one of the most disastrous words in the English language, because it means nothing. You know, I hope everything will turn out all right, meaning I doubt if it will. Or you leave the sick bed and you say to the person, I hope you'll get better, meaning I think you'll probably get worse. Now, a spiritually motivated consciousness, in other words, with intelligence, knowing what you want, and developing a motivation toward it, by putting it in the framework of immediate expectancy. Immediate expectancy. Not 5 years from now, not 2 years from now, and not 2 months from now. But now. Right here, right now. Now to come back. That is what I call a spiritual mind, right action. That what I want is intelligent, so therefore it's spiritual. I can have it, so why don't I develop the motivation to have it? See, the universe doesn't limit me, and it doesn't limit you. We are all self-conditioned. We are all self-limited. We're the ones that say, I can't. I shouldn't. It's too late. That's not the way nature talks at all. Remember, the leaves will come back on the trees in the spring. And remember, the daffodils will come up in the spring. Nature doesn't say, well, I finished it off last year, therefore I'll quit. Always moving ahead. Now, these words to the metaphysical mind are horrendous. I can't. I shouldn't. I can't afford it. Which if you can't afford it, then don't do it, but get the money so you can afford it. Don't go in debt praising the Lord. Pay your bills. So, I can't, I shouldn't, it's too late, or I'm either too young or too old. These are horrendous negatives. And you know we have convinced ourselves of them? We have convinced ourselves that this is so. I discovered that one of the advantages of being a little over 60, not much, that when my, because inevitably, in almost every week, an insurance agent who is trying to get new business naturally calls me up and said, I'd like to come in and talk to you. I have a wonderful proposal for you. And I say, no good, I'm 60. And he goes, thank you very much. I hope I didn't disturb you. Hangs up. Great. Great. Now, come back to this. These self-limitations, which we should abolish intelligently with right motivations. In other words, it's not just the mind making statements, it's the heart responding. The mind and the heart, mind and emotion, is the whole thing. Now, can it do everything? No, only what you think it can do. Well, then, I got it even this week, someone said, well, with Dr. Parker in the Bible, it says all things are possible. With God, all things are possible. And I say, I believe that. But what about you? I'm not questioning the omnipotence of the infinite mind. But it's so easy to use that. And I say, oh, but with you, what's possible? Because you can only have what's in the framework of your present mentality. Now, the books of ours which you read all try to have you expand your expectancy of the good. And not as fantasy, but as a demonstrable thing right here and right now. So, everything is possible when you know it's possible. Not when I know it, not when the universe knows it, not when a wise teacher tells you all about it. Because you have only the framework of your own mentality in which to work. Now, I may make statements which will inspire you. I've done that for years. They've even inspired me, some of them. Every once in a while I say something, where on earth did that come from? I'm impressed. Yes. But you see, inspiration without a practical method of doing something about it is of no value. We've had inspired people down through the ages. We had a woman in the church some years ago who was sure that she was to be the next great novelist and all the rest. And laboriously she wrote a novel, took it to a literary agent, and the literary agent said, well, I'm sorry, it was no good. And she said, well, I was divinely inspired to write it. Literary agent said, I don't know about that. All I know is this is no good. Well, is it worth trying to rewrite? Well, I think you might try it, said the agent. I'm sure, saying in her mind, I hope she never goes back again. At any rate, that book was written and rewritten for 15 years that I know of. And just before her death, she got one more rejection slip saying, no, the book is not printable in its present state. For years, she was under a delusion. If that had been correct inspiration and she had applied it correctly, she would have written the book. Or whatever else it was that she'd be inspired to do. But she did it. And I tried at one point to convince her to take that same amount of time and energy, because heaven knows, this was years ago, how many typewriters she wore out, how many reams of paper she used, how many typewriter ribbons, and if you're a writer, you live with a cup of coffee next to you, so how many pounds of coffee, you know. But I didn't get anywhere. She was divinely inspired. And of course she wasn't at all. If she had been, the book would have been all right. If she had been, the book would have been good. But she wasn't. Now, why I'm saying this, you can only work through your mental framework. You can't be a Shakespeare. Or if you have a good voice, you can't be another great opera singer or concert singer or whatever it is. You've only got your mental framework through which to work. And that's all I've got. Now, if I can follow the wisdom of these modern teachers, and I can to some extent, well, to quite an extent, to realize that I am only conditioned by my own consciousness. Now, that's rough going. That is rough going. Because we have been trained since childhood that the world affects us. Been trained since childhood. The world affects us. So some weeks ago, when they were still thinking about it, somebody bemoaned the fact, well, Dr. Parker, what are you going to do? And they put that surtax on. I said, I'm not going to do anything except I'm going to pay it and keep my mouth shut. That's all I'm going to do. I guess now they're not going to do it. I'm very delighted. I would have paid it. I would have paid it. And I would have kept my mouth shut. Oh, they were so excited. Oh, so excited. Now, I didn't want to pay it any more than they did, but I knew one thing. If it's the law of the land, I'm going to do it, period. So, I made my peace with it, right? I didn't let it come in and stir me up and, put me on that awful, awful merry-go-round of consciousness where when you get through with your worry, you're right back to where you started. All you've done is go around. Go around. And at the end of it, you're right where you started. And you have friends that do this all the time. Maybe you do it all the time, I don't know. I try not to. Every once in a while, I say, hey, get off this merry-go-round. Hey, get off this merry-go-round. I don't want it. And so I start my work. And I say, okay, mine now. My consciousness is under my control, and I now take control of it, and I declare that this worry stops right here, right now. And that in its place, there is a right spiritual concept, idea, and I give it my full attention of mind and emotion, and I give it my expectation. Key word. In the old days, most people prayed for what they wanted, but they never expected to get it. You heard me out there. In the old days, they prayed for what they wanted, but they never expected to get it. Now, you and I can't be like that. Oh, we can be, sure. Nothing to stop us if you want to be like that. No, I have to watch the confines of my own mind. There is the beginning and the end of the demonstrations in my life. It all starts there, it all begins there, completes itself there, finishes itself there. There it is. Now, will this cure worry if you work at it hard enough? See, I sometimes say to people, I think you were born worried. I think you've been a worrier all your life. And then I joke them and I say, but you don't have to be, you know. And then I always come back with, well, if you had the problems I've got, you'd be worried. And I said, that's exactly why I haven't got the problems you've got. Exactly why I haven't got those. But I said, I got a couple of others if you want them. Yeah. Your mental framework. If you don't remember another sentence from this talk today, I hope you remember that. It can only happen to you when it happens through you. An old adage. And here is the framework. You're going to say, well, does that mean I need more education? No. Does that mean I need to read great books on philosophy? No. Read mine. They're better. Read Ernest Holmes. Read Frederick Bales. Read Troward. He's rough, though. He's hard to read. Now to come back.
Look, we always think, in order to get something, I need more than that which I have. And you don't need more than that which you already have. Is it wrong to read philosophy? It's great if you like it. Is it wrong to do this or that or the other? Fine. But you could, that doesn't mean you're going to demonstrate any better than you are right now. Because a key word is very corny. And I didn't originate it. Inspiration without perspiration is fantasy. I'm going to say that one again. Inspiration without perspiration, play on words, meaning effort, is fantasy. And we don't want that. Or at least I don't want it and haven't got it. All right, my consciousness, which used to be quite an indefinite term, thank God with modern ideas floating around, the word consciousness now is understood by most people. This thinking, feeling, awareness that I am. In my classes recently, I read a supposed letter that Thomas Troward wrote to a questioner in New Jersey. And I say that because the letter has never been authenticated, although if you were to read it, it's definitely his style and his language. And he said that the key to all this instruction was a very simple one. And that is, the only power there is I am. Now, if you write that down, put quotes around it. The only power there is I am. Meaning awareness, consciousness. Because you're the only person in the world that can say I am. You can't say it for me. And I can't say it for you. They are the two words of individuality. They are the two words of spiritual essence. Now, I had read this letter at the beginning of every time I teach Troward. And like everything else, this time it hit me. The previous times did not hit me. This time it hit. And I suddenly knew that the only power there is my power in my mind and emotions. And you're going to say, what about God? That is God. That is the creative cause. That is the infinite mind individualized in you and in me. That is the whole thing. The only power there is I am, my awareness, my mental framework, my consciousness, and what I do with it. Now, people will say, well, Dr. Barker, it sounds good. I'm not trying to talk to sound good. I'm trying to stimulate in you, in me, the tools that I have and you have, and how to use them. Get a spiritual idea, meaning intelligent idea, in a right motivation framework, and think it. And think it now. Not I'm going to have it next year. And expect it now. Years ago, we had a very interesting teacher in this city, Flora Kovalshin. And she had all these little stories she loved to tell. And she told this one about the woman that came to her back, let's say, in the 20s. And said, Mrs. Shin, I want you to give me a series of treatments because I want to go to Europe. And so Mrs. Shin said, well, is your luggage packed? And she said, well, of course not. Then she said, go home. I'm not going to treat you until you're ready to go. Go home, pack your luggage, put it in the front, near the front door, live out of your suitcases, and then come back to me and I'll get you to Europe. Now, of course, she always finished off with the 3 days or 3 weeks later. The woman came back and she gave the spiritual treatment and the woman ran off to Europe in a surprising and unusual and wonderful way. Now, the latter part I can't prove. Nor can I prove the former part, except she loved to tell the story. And she used to say to people, you want something? Then pack your bags and get ready for it. I can't think of a better way of concluding this lecture this morning. So it is. Thank you. And remember, I'll be speaking here in Alice Sully Hall next Sunday, rain or shine, and invite you to be with us again and for the radio audience to be listening again. All right, that time has come in our activity here. We take up happy money called the collection. What in the old days they used to call an offering to God. I don't look upon it as that anymore. I want to think of it as a collection of the best wishes in the world by means of money, so that this organization can continue to prosper and expand. We got 7 radio stations, I'd like 20. You know, and we got a nice little mortgage still on our building, I'd like to get rid of that. So, the ushers will wait upon you and collect the happy money.
Thank you.
Goodwin. You're great. All right, we have one more activity today at our own building. Mr. Fritz Hermans will be speaking there at 6 o'clock tonight, and you're all invited. Now, tomorrow, as you know, with our New York State mix-up, at any rate, we will have the noon meeting, the noon lecture, which Eric Pace, the Reverend Eric Pace, gives at 12 noon. The building will be open from 11 until 2, and our employees, including myself, will have the rest of the day off. So, the building will not be open. That means that my afternoon class tomorrow will not be given. It'll be given Tuesday afternoon. And the evening class of Mr. Grayson will not be given. It'll be given later in the course. And if you have your worksheets, it's so noted on them. We're looking ahead. I was thinking this morning, do you realize that 2 weeks from today, that we will have our Thanksgiving service? And we have lots of beautiful flowers here. And then, 4 weeks later, we're going to have Christmas. And do you know what Mr. Goodwin has been able to arrange way in advance for us? Get ready for a gasp. When you come in here on Sunday before Christmas, come in very early, there are going to be 5 harps on this stage. Not 1, 5. Now, if that won't make you spiritual, there's nothing that will. So, we're going to be beautiful. So, I'm sure you want to be here. Now, what's happening the rest of the week? Well, the rest of the week is all the usual things. A noon meeting every day. And Tuesday, Mr. Grayson. Wednesday, Dr. Walker. Thursday, Mr. Henry, Friday, Mr. Hermans, and Saturday, Mr. Guperis. Every day at 12:10 noon. So come in whenever you can. Now, for the radio audience, I want to give you the address at which to which you can write and send your contributions, your happy money, and also to order books. And that address is 14 East 48th Street. Just say, Dr. Barker, 14 East 48th Street, New York, New York, and the zip 10017. We do have book lists that we are very happy to send out to anyone in the radio audience so that you'll know what our books are. And again, this morning I want to feature the 2 books of Dr. Bitzer's, which we have in stock. His Dominant Mind has not yet come in, but we do have Your Mental Computer and The Creative Word, the 2 words. Creative Word is $2, and Your Mental Computer is $1.15. And the radio audience can write in for them. That's 2 books. The Creative Word, $2, Your Mental Computer, $1.25. Now, next Sunday, Mr. Grayson, the Reverend Mr. Grayson, is going to take a large group of people up to Lake Mohonk for a seminar weekend. That means that you who are not going, please come to this meeting. You know, when somebody takes 150 to 200 people away, that's a lot of empty seats to fill. So, if you're in the New York area, come on in next Sunday morning. At any rate, he's asked me to give you some happy news. And that is that the seminar that he's arranged is completely sold out, and he cannot accept any more people to come to it. So if you've been delaying, saying you thought you'd go, it's too late. He can't squeeze another soul in. So, that's good news, isn't it? We're always glad to hear it. All right, now let's come back. I ended with the statement, pack your bags. Good sentence. 3 nice words. This concept of are you ready for what you want? Am I ready for what I want? Not only physically ready, that's easy, but what about this framework of my consciousness? Am I ready for what I want? You see, from the beginning, we have known in all the Bibles of the world of what we call a divine givingness, that the infinite Spirit wants us to have the good. Now, each teacher expressed it differently. Each one of the varying Bibles, East and West, said it differently, but the essence is there. That all the good there is available to every individual. Because all is infinite mind. And you are that mind. And so what do? We do it by means of consciousness. We prepare ourselves, and then we get ready to have it. So just as I ended a few minutes ago with pack your bags, I want to end this morning with, are you ready to have your demonstration? And if you are, you'll have it. All right, shall we stand for our closing idea together? There is one God, one mind, one intelligence, one creative cause, one infinite Spirit, one life, one love, one beauty, one great expanding goodness. Always we are in this, always we are of this. So we now lift up our minds unto the hills of consciousness, from whence cometh our help, for our help cometh from great spiritual ideas. All right, so be it, and thank you for coming.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.